And good morning, Detroit, and everyone across the Great Lakes state of Michigan. Welcome to JR Monday. It's great to be with you this morning with the mainstay, Lloyd Jackson.
It's actually Thursday.
Is it Thursday?
Yeah. You said Monday. Sunday? You said Monday.
You know, here's where I was thinking. I opened up St. Patrick's Day with Happy Thanksgiving. I get so fired up about our crowd, our audience,
yeah,
that sometimes my mouth moves and my brain doesn't, and I'm trying to keep. But if I say JR Sunday a couple times,
we'll understand. Yeah, we'll understand. Yeah. Well, they left me in good hands.
Yeah. So Happy Thanksgiving.
Listen, you got hit on the lodge, and I got caught on the lodge as well. The lodge right there around Livernois was stop and go for a little while because of wood debris.
Yeah, you see a little yellow on your map,
uh-huh.
and you're used to the normal where they pinch you double on both sides.
Exactly.
This was something different, right?
It was something different, and it was backed up pretty much this morning. But as I was sitting there, about to get off on the Livernois exit, it just opened up. But I tell you another thing: saw a lot of state police cars on the side of the road with people pulled over because people go about 90 miles an hour on the lodge at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I was so nervous about getting in here for Ann Thomas and the crew that I came a little bit earlier. So I was the one that had to get off on Livernois and get back on.
Gotcha.
You must have been right behind me.
I was right behind you.
And it opened up.
Yep. Yeah. Opened up. The Cleveland Cavaliers facing an early challenge in their Eastern Conference semifinals matchup, falling to the Pistons, as you know, in game one, 111-101. Game two set for tonight down at LCA, and the Pistons now lead the series 1-0. Cavaliers, who are still winless on the road this postseason, will try to even things up before the series shifts to Cleveland. And the way they played, Mark, the way the Pistons played, that's the Pistons that I'm used to seeing.
That was one seed that came out. There's no doubt about it. But as you watch these playoff games, even within each game, but also the whole series, you're seeing these ebbs and flows. I mean, the Pistons to be down 3-1 and then to be down 24 points at the half or close to that, whatever that it was, 20-something, right?
Yeah, it was 24.
And they come back.
And they come back.
It's you're seeing it in a lot of the series where there's these big shifts and swings. The Pistons had it yesterday where they had the big lead.
Yes.
Cavs come back within three.
Tied it up.
The Pistons took care of business.
Yeah, so let's hope we can do it again. Let's get two here in Detroit before we head off to Cleveland on Saturday. Houston Astros pitcher Framber Valdez been suspended 6 games following a heated incident in a game against the Boston Red Sox. Detroit Tigers manager A.J. Hinch has also been suspended a game. Valdez was disciplined after hitting Red Sox shortstop Trevor Story with the pitch immediately after surrendering back-to-back home runs. He was ejected after allowing 10 runs in the outing, 7 earned. The suspension is a setback for the Tigers' rotation, which is already dealing with these injuries. You got Skubal, who's having a surgery on his elbow, and Verlander's out with an injury. This is, really going to be a problem for our pitching rotation, Mark.
Yeah, there's some going on in Detroit with all of our teams. You're seeing injuries across all four of our professional teams right now. The Tigers are taking the hit with the pitchers. But, of course, you know, when that news came down, I think everybody in Detroit took a deep breath of, he's our guy, he's our leader. Well, now it's time for other guys to step up in his hopefully brief absence and take care of business going on. They had a rough road with the Red Sox. They lost 3, but still only a game back from the Cleveland Guardians.
Next man up, and so we'll see what happens there. The Attorney General has announced felony charges against Faye Baydoun, accusing the Farmington Hills businesswoman of misusing millions tied to a state-funded business development program. Now, prosecutors say Baydoun fraudulently administered a $20 million grant awarded to Global Link International, a nonprofit she founded to attract international entrepreneurs to Michigan. Investigators allege no businesses were relocated through the program and instead claim Baydoun used grant money for personal expenses while collecting a salary of more than $550,000 a year. The Attorney General's office says Baydoun submitted false invoices and reports to the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, including expenses tied to home furnishings, patio supplies, luxury rugs, and private dinners connected to then-Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan. Baydoun now faces 16 felony counts, including conducting a criminal enterprise, forgery, and larceny by conversion. The investigation remains ongoing.
Dan Gilbert has a number of isms, and they're pretty popular. One of them is do the right thing. That's all I can say to story number 3.
Yeah. I mean, it's something.
It's frustrating to read things like that in the news, right? There's so many things that happen in our society, community, and it's just do the right thing.
A note believed to have been written by convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein has been unsealed by a federal judge after remaining hidden for years in a criminal case involving Epstein's former cellmate, Nicholas Taglioni. U.S. District Judge Kenneth Karras ruled that there is no longer a valid reason to keep the document sealed. The handwritten note appears to reference investigations into Epstein and includes statements about choosing one's time to say goodbye. Epstein was found dead in his jail cell at Manhattan's Metropolitan Correctional Center in August of 2019 while he was awaiting trial on federal sex trafficking charges. Authorities ruled the death a suicide, citing major failures by jail staff, including missed security checks. I don't know. I just always thought that was something a little funny there.
Yeah, and I also, you know, having been through a number of issues at Michigan State and the like, transparency is so strong, provided it doesn't negatively impact somebody that's innocent. But when you hear stories like this,
yeah,
if there's a way to open something that can create some positive relief for others, I'm a huge advocate for transparency should be the leader.
Absolutely. Yeah. President Trump says his administration has held what he called a very good talks with Tehran over the past 24 hours as conflicting signals emerge about the future of the conflict between the United States and Iran. An Iranian official says a U.S. proposal aimed at ending the war is currently under review, but provided no details on the status of negotiations. Meanwhile, Israel carried out strikes near Beirut as regional tensions remain high. And speaking from the Oval Office, the president claimed the United States has won the war in Iran and said diplomatic efforts are ongoing, added, we're in good shape and now we're doing well. Despite the statements, officials on both sides are offering different accounts and little concrete action has been released about any potential agreement or ceasefire framework. I mean, you know, one moment you hear it, we're good.
Right.
The next moment, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to obliterate you.
And the results are in the outcome. It's when you watch all these conflicts and you see the squeeze, it's what's the impact it's having on people in various countries. Like when you look at squeezing the canal and not letting traffic through,
mm-hmm.
it's having an impact on China. Well, we can say so what, but then China creates most of our prescription drugs. So all of a sudden, if we're not making them here,
mm-hmm.
now we've got that reliance. So you got to follow this pathway. You've got Cuba involved. You've got China involved. And that's part of the challenge of these conflicts is who's it squeezing and what's the impact it's having on people all over the globe.
Well, and also, and I think something else, Mark, that we don't talk a lot about is the fertilizer, because fertilizer comes through there and the farmers are catching
exactly.
it too.
Yeah. It's there's so many different things that happen on a global scale as we're looking at conflicts between nations. And, you know, that's what the UN was supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it there right now? You know, what's the power that they have? Those are things that you kind of go through. I think today it's let's get the conflict resolved because of all of the different situations, but do it the right way. Make sure that the world is safe. Make sure that the economies have a chance to be strong in each of these nations, especially right here at home in the United States.
And a reminder that the People Mover is up again, had been down for a couple of months due to a bad windstorm we had and had some damage onto the tracks and some things had to be redone. So they shut it down to make sure everything was in order. It is in order. It is back up just in time for the Pistons tonight.
Right.
I think Bruno Mars is here this weekend.
He's here Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, at Ford Field. So, yeah, it's a good time for that. And it's a lot of other things happening in the city of Detroit, especially coming this summer. It's going to be pretty busy downtown.
It is. It's fun watching the queue line and the people movers zipping around the city and moving us all to great things that are going on down there.
Who do we have coming up at 6:19?
Chris Presson is going to join us. He is the co-executive director and chief revenue officer of the Rocket Classic. Big announcement this past week, six top names coming into the field. We're going to talk about that and the exciting things that results in with Chris Presson right after this.
That is next on 760 WJR. No matter where you look, rising costs are hitting Michiganders hard. And when you're forced to make tough choices, keeping the lights and heat on, well, shouldn't be one of them. Consumers Energy is stepping up, giving back $5 million to assistance agencies and supporting efforts to increase energy assistance dollars for families in need by 50%. And with personalized energy savings programs, you can take steps to start reducing your energy bills today. Count on Consumers Energy for support. Learn more at consumersenergy.com/help.
Welcome back to JR Morning.
Morning.
On this Thursday.
Not Sunday.
JR Morning on this Thursday. it's great to have you with us. The Rocket Classic now entering its eighth year here in the city of Detroit. Dan Gilbert brought it here for a variety of reasons. It was to bring visitors into the city, to create high publicity and for not only Rocket, but more importantly for the city of Detroit and how to elevate it. It was a precursor to many other events. I argue that the Grand Prix and the Rocket Classic, or the reason the NFL draft showed up here, is the reason the Final Four, it kind of rejuvenated big-time events here in the city of Detroit. Another, Lloyd, is the impact it makes. Black Tech Saturdays, Human IT,
yes.
PAL. You look at First Tee and Midnight Golf, now known as College Career and Beyond, just celebrated its 25th anniversary. Those are all initiatives that have been backed by the Rocket Classic in a big way.
Yeah, and you know, and the Rocket Classic gives back. It gives back.
Right.
And you see tangible results as a result.
It does. The co-executive director, chief revenue officer, is on the line with us, Chris Presson. He joins us now in a week where, Chris, we made some big announcements, some players coming in, and that's creating a lot of excitement for not only the people that are working on it, the 1,300 volunteers, the staff, the excitement around the Rocket Classic is starting to build and starting to build fast.
That's right, Mark. I think when you talk about three of the top 10 players in the world, two former champions, one former Ryder Cup captain, you mix that with the vibrancy of this city and this region, I think it's a recipe for success. I can tell you that we've seen an uptick since the announcement, just in inquiries around everything from grounds passes to the premium seatings from holes 14 through 18. So certainly one of the stronger fields, if not the strongest field we've had.
And Chris, I know, you know, you've shaped this tournament into more than just a stop on the tour. I mean, what's the bigger vision you're chasing each year?
Well, we're looking to make sure that we have a viable product going forward for our fans and for the community to want to come to. I think anytime you build an event, you try to look at experiences and opportunities where you can enhance both of those. And I think we're doing that. We heard the fans say that, you know, the July 4th weekend is tough, a lot of family commitments, so we've moved off that weekend. We heard people say it's so hot, it's hard not to find a spot anywhere in the country during that time of the year when it's not hot. But what we've done is we've added four cool zones where you can hydrate, you can take a break in the shade, and you can sit in a cool air with a fan blowing on you as well. So we're taking all the necessary steps to make sure and ensure that the fans know that we're listening so that we can continue to build this into something special for every year to come.
As you use your ears first and then your action is some of those examples that you just described, you look at an event like this, trying to bring in, you know, up to 20,000 people per day on a field. It's a golf course that is a members golf course, and we need to make sure we take the DGC membership into account. But you're building a large city basically on a flat piece of land to host a lot of people, and your cooperation between selling things and operations, like what are you going to build? How big are you going to build it? Those have to be constant conversations you're having leading up to the event.
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing conversation. I think that's the key to the tournament, frankly, is communication, not just internally, but externally. I think we do that very, very well. I think we work in concert with all three of those components, the operations staff, the sales staff, and the fans themselves. You mentioned DGC. It is their golf course. It is their members. There are a number of people that live in and around the golf course that we put in flux when we come in for that, you know, 10 to 12-day period, and we're trying our best not to interrupt their repertoire of things that they do typically on a normal day. And so all of those things we take into account when thinking what we're going to do, Mark, as you mentioned, and how we're going to build it and when we're going to build it, so we don't upset the apple cart as much as possibly we could based upon putting things in spaces and places they don't belong quite yet.
And you know, the Rocket Classic has really strong corporate backing as well. How do these partnerships kind of go beyond the branding and actually shape that fan experience?
Yeah, I think the benefit we have, Lloyd, is that it's just not a brand. It's an opportunity for you to entertain. It's an opportunity for you to sit and have conversations. It's an opportunity for you to allow people to come and go. You could have a group that comes and joins you in the morning. That same group could exchange tickets and bring in a different grouping of people for the afternoon. So I think it's about conversation. There's a lot of business that gets done there, I can tell you that. And a lot of it is based upon the time spent with potential and current clients as well.
It's my understanding, close to capacity on many of the hospitality venues. Patrons and grounds tickets have become a focus of the attention for you this year. As you look at that from parking and ticket pricing, talk a little bit about the urgency on some of the ticket dates. I think you're having some cutoffs with some extreme discounts. Talk about the patron ticket, the grounds ticket, the energy you're trying to create on the course.
Yeah, I think it's one of the more important items within the golf tournament itself. It's what brings that energy and that vibrancy to the tournament. We have reduced our ticketing prices between now and the end of June about 50%. So please take advantage of it. You can hop on our website, find directions on how to get tickets. And if not, my name and number and my email are on there as well. You can call me directly and we'll get you taken care of. I think if you're a company or an individual looking to host people and you want a premium experience, we are starting to run low. I would think between 14 and 18, we have maybe a dozen spots left. And we've created some additional ones and sold those. So I think this is an opportunity for you to really jump in. There is great value for your investment. And if you get one deal done off of an investment to host clients, it will make it worthwhile because the value is certainly there and the price matches that value.
We're speaking with Chris Presson. He is a co-executive director and chief revenue officer for the Rocket Classic. And Chris, you know, when this tournament wraps up, and you know, what's the moment that makes you kind of step back and say, you know, this is why we do this?
I think when you're in the midst of it and you're exhausted because we've been going hard for 6 months to a year, I think throughout the time you're there, you kind of have those moments where you sit down because you're exhausted and you look around and you say, you know what, I had a hand in this. And you start to become proud about what you've done, not only for yourself and what you've been able to accomplish, but with your team. All those late nights and early mornings were all worth it. And more importantly, when you see people that have been to the golf course for years and been coming to the tournament, as Mark said, for 8 years, and you see people that are brand new to the tournament with their families experiencing golf for the first time, I think that's a win-win for everybody. And that's, again, when you kind of exhale and recalibrate and get back into it and go for the next day.
Chris, can't thank you enough. Rocket Classic coming up end of July, 1st of August. We're looking forward to it and appreciate all the hard work you're doing.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah.
A lot of excitement coming up this summer.
It's going to be fun. The Pro-Ams are a blast. I've played in a few of those. I played once with Nick Saban.
Yeah.
I got some good stories on those, too. Maybe tomorrow.
another great thing this summer, the Ford Fireworks coming up. A lot of great things with the parade company. Tony Michaels, the president, CEO, next to talk about it on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Thursday, May 7th. A lot of energetic guests in the morning, in the 6 o'clock hour.
Yes.
Our next one we're going to have to lift up a little bit. He doesn't have a lot of energy, so we might have to coax him along. Tony Michaels, he is the president and CEO of the Parade Company. Thank you for getting up this morning.
Getting up? I've been up.
You already got your workout in.
Let's kick some energy into this show, Lloyd. Come
okay.
On, let's kick him up a little
let's,
bit.
Let's get, kick him up a notch? Okay.
I saw you happen to be on WDIV this week. You're always in the news. And some more exciting news about the Ford fireworks.
Well, I'll tell you, it's so nice, you know, to be able to go on live and introduce these great things for our great city. And yeah, June 22nd, the Ford fireworks. We are so pumped, you know, ready for launch in Detroit with truly, truly the best fireworks show in America. And, you know, guys, it can't be done without Ford Motor Company and Mary Culler, president of Ford Philanthropy, the Ford family, Bill and Lisa, and the whole team at Ford. And we're just honored to be able to do this, but it's our job to make it the best in the nation. And also we have other companies, you know, like I hate to say in a secondary sponsorship role, but they help in such a big way. And I could go through that short little list, right? I can do
yeah,
that.
Go ahead.
Okay. Blue Cross Blue Shield in Michigan, Tricia Keith, always there for us. Rocket, Mark, you know, Dan Gilbert is, and the whole team at Rocket, such partners of ours and everything. Mott Children's Hospital for the win. Ewald Huntington Bank, Mike Landon team, DTE, Joy Harris, Rodney Cole, Gardner White, Rachel Stewart and team. And we just don't get things done. And the Detroit Police Department, Chief Todd Dedison and his team are incredible. And everything we do, they are the partner in what we do in this city. And it's great. It really is.
You know what, Tony, I try to get down to the fireworks each year, and, you know, every year always feels bigger than the last. I'm trying to understand how you continue to raise the bar for something that's so iconic here in the city.
Well, we have 24 minutes to work with, and honestly, we view the events that we do as owned by the people of the city and the state, the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. And we say we have to keep doing things better. So when we're done with events, we have meetings, but we don't have lessons learned. Yeah, we have to do that, of course.
Yeah.
But we talk about how much greater can we make it? What can we do? Like this year, we take over Hart Plaza, but we really don't do much in there. We put some food vendors, but we're going to be piping the music right into Hart Plaza for all of the people.
Speaking of music, Tony, I want you to, I mean, so Tony prepares the whole soundtrack.
I know.
He gets his
8-track,
you know, and he's playing them at home. He pipes them together. And
his 45s.
But he does the whole soundtrack. I'm sure he gets some advice and counsel. But you actually lay down the track for the whole show, don't you, Tony?
I do, and it's done. And Patrick Barreau, the choreographer with Sam Belli, in fact, we just had an hour conversation 2 days ago. We continue talking. We kind of have a thing, kind of a mental bond. Like he knows where I'm going. And what I have to do with this is hit all the genres of music, and from Motown to country and so on. If somebody passes away in the past year, I like to throw something in. And so there is a crazy science to this, but yet we've got to keep the upbeat and the feel. And I think people are going to really enjoy what we did this year. And the way it's going to be choreographed, I urge people to come downtown and to take this in. Hart Plaza opens at 2 o'clock, and Belle Isle opens at 2 o'clock. Belle Isle will take the first 3,000 cars over the bridge. Last year at 5 o'clock, Belle Isle could take no more cars, and you had to walk over the bridge. Hart Plaza closes when the Detroit Police Department decides that there's, you know, 35-plus thousand people in Hart Plaza, and then all the areas around downtown and so on. I just urge everyone to take it, and we're trying to figure out, and Mark, I might need your help on some of this. How to get the music into other areas also. But we're going to pipe it into Hart Plaza. We've got that figured out.
That growth is a challenge, Lloyd. You look at these two events, and I argue that between the fireworks and America's Thanksgiving Parade, mm-hmm. those are the two gathering events that brings more people together in peaceful ways and happy ways than anything that happens in Detroit.
I agree 100%. And Tony, I you know, there's still a lot of buzz around that proposal to transform the Broadhead Naval Armory. And I understand there was an earmark from the Michigan House as well to go towards that. Talk about that and the fundraising efforts to get that turned around, because it's not just a headquarters for you guys. I mean, you're going to have like tours and education and internships and a veterans office. It's going to be for the community as well.
Oh, it's going to be one of those Detroit landmarks and a tourist stop and an event center and internships, education. We have sponsorship from both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, as they iron out the budget this year. And I've met with over 110 politicians from both sides of the aisle, and we are really, really pushing from both sides to get this $10 million from the state. If we get the 10, we'll be at 20. And then it makes it a little bit easier for me to get this closed of upwards of just $42 million. So we're asking for $10 million, from the state. And we did get $3.5 from the federal government just a couple of years ago, thanks to Debbie Stabenow. If we can get this done, it would just be a magical spot right there on Jefferson Avenue. And if you think about it, you've got Gabriel Richard Park, if you're headed back towards downtown, to our side, and then you're going to have the new WNBA Detroit Piston office there.
Right.
It just fits so well, and it is really a great design that we did together with Rossetti. And this needs to happen. It really does. We persevered. This started 8-9 years ago, and we haven't given up, and I'm not giving up right now. And we're hoping that with representation from both sides of the aisle introducing this bill, that we can get our $10 million. It'll change the way that I can go in and ask other people, because a lot of people have not said no. They've simply said, let's see where you go.
Yeah.
Let's see how you do.
Right.
And we just keep digging, and it's important. And plus, you know, it's a blighted building. It's been empty for 25 years. We want to show up to the city and go see James Tate and city council and say, we've got money. Let's do this right now.
Yeah. Tony Michaels, I can't thank you enough for all the great work you do with not only the fireworks, but the big Thanksgiving parade that's coming up. But more importantly, the leadership that you provide this city in so many broad ways. Thank you so much for joining us here on JR Morning.
Well, thank you. And it's the 100th parade this year presented by Gardner.
Wow.
That it is. It's a big one. Can't wait to hear who those grand marshals are going to be.
That's right.
A lot coming.
All right.
Coming.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. The Pistons will be at LCA tonight, taking on the Cavs, and some issues going on with the Detroit Tigers. Let's talk to Johnny Kane. He's a broadcaster for Detroit Sportsnet next here on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Thursday morning. Lloyd Jackson in the studio with me.
And yes, sir.
The Tigers, they just wrapped up a series with the Red Sox, and it's good to get them out of town.
It really is.
Still a game back. No, it wasn't good for us. Johnny Kane is the great voice, one of the great, great sports personalities here in the city of Detroit. We have the pleasure of listening to him throughout the season with the Tigers, and he joins us now. Johnny, good to have you here on JR Morning.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate the warm welcome. Yeah, always good to be on with you guys.
The Tigers just wrapped up a series, yet they lose 3 to the Red Sox at home, yet still only a game back. Some injuries have jumped into the fray, as it does with most any team throughout the season. You never like to see your ace go down for a period of time, but as you look at where we're at in this season, coming off this series, there's still a lot to be excited about for the 26 campaign.
Yeah, I think, I always talk about perspective and a lot of things. And like, I love baseball. I know you love baseball. Lloyd, I'm sure you love baseball. You know, you do have to have perspective on things. And look, like, you don't want to get swept by Boston for sure. You'd like to see the offense do a little bit more. You don't make excuses. Like, nobody feels sorry for you. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you've had to weather this early storm. You played 1/5 of the season. You're 2 games under 500. You're a game out of first place. And if you look across baseball, and obviously we're zoomed in here on Detroit, but there's 2 teams in baseball that have above 500 records in the American League. Think about that. The Yankees and the Rays. Everybody else is hovering around 500 or below. That's it. So when you have perspective on it, if you say, okay, we've got a full clip, we're completely healthy, and we're not winning enough games, okay, then you could make a case that way. But you've got 14 guys on the IL. Your ace is down. You just had the suspension for Framber Valdez. Mm-hmm. Justin Verlander hasn't pitched. Casey Mize is still working his way back. You have one healthy starter who threw last night in Jack Flaherty. So I just think perspective is looking at it and say, can we tread water long enough, okay, in the first month of May? Can you tread water and still be in it, not lose too much ground, and still have a chance? I don't think the season is lost. I think there's so much excitement going into the year, and I get it. Like, I'm a fan too.
Right.
You're excited. You want to play great ball. You want to, stack wins and create some distance, between you and everybody else in the Central. But that hasn't played out. But you've still got a race to run. You still have 4/5 of the year left to go. And if you're able to get these bodies back in, back healthy, then let's see what it looks like and then make an assessment. But I understand. I mean, I get it. There's a little bit of frustration, but there's a lot of people around baseball that are looking at their teams and saying, hey, man, what if? Well, you just got to continue to deal with what you've got right now. And the fact of the matter is, you're a game out of first place in spite of everything that's happened at this point.
Yeah, but when your ace goes down, does it become a next man up situation, or does the front office need to get aggressive and make some type of move?
Well, that's tough. I mean, I think when you look at what they built going into the season, and again, it's like if ifs and buts, with candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. But, they haven't been able to stay healthy, so you haven't had that full locked-in starting five. Like, Troy Melton will help this team when he's able to come back, and you insert him into the rotation. I think there's enough arms depth-wise I don't think they'll act hastily to go and get somebody, you know, prematurely. If Tarek's going to be out, and again, it's just speculative, that, you know, say it's around 2 months, right? You know, can you, so how many starts is that over, you know, every fifth day over 2 months? Can you weather it every fifth day and say, we're good enough, but we can still hang in? That's what I think. And then again, when you start adding, like Kader Montero has been a huge blessing, right? So you have another guy that's been able to slot in when Verlander has been down. Verlander is back, Mize is back, Troy Melton eventually works his way back, maybe late in the year, Jackson Jobe. I think they still have enough starting pitching as stated, but you've just got to continue to weather it right now.
I think a lot of times you see situations like this, and I have at Michigan State, where the star goes down, the ace goes down, and everybody else has to elevate kind of what you were referring to, Lloyd. Everybody has to elevate the game, and in some cases it can help a team be stronger because everyone else who's maybe subconsciously stayed back a little bit because Tarek's on the mound, now they know they got to play, and when he comes back, you have the potential to have a team that's even stronger.
Yeah, I mean, look, the starting pitching is going to carry the day, and so you have to have it. But at the end of the day, like a game like last night, you know, you didn't score a run. So you have to score runs to win games, too, in this game. And so even with Scooble going down, when it's an everyday guy, you know, if it's an everyday player, you know, let's say somebody who's valuable to your offense every day, you lose that type of production, and now it's like, okay, you really got to elevate and step up. This bullpen's been able to keep it together. They've had to go back to this, you know, the pitching chaos, which was a, you know, a legitimate strategy 3 years ago because they didn't have the quality depth that they do now. But they've been able to supplement, you know, like we had two bullpen days back to back, and you were able to get innings, not just eat innings, but like have some quality depth in your pen. So there's some different ways, you know, it's not always going to look the way you initially drew it up, but you've got enough arms where you can sustain it. But they've got to, you know, the offense has to get going a little bit here, you know, and put pressure on it that way. You know, Jack, last night with Jack Flaherty only had the two earned runs, which were allowed. And if you go five, you get five innings from your starter and you give up two earned, you know, you feel good if your offense is there to pick you up a little bit, then you could win that game.
Johnny,
you
know 30, what I mean? I just got about 30 seconds. Pistons tonight down at LCA.
Let's
they
go.
Take game two.
They're taking game two. Why not? It's a super competitive series throughout the year. They split in the regular season. I thought it was a statement game in game one. I see no reason to believe that guys like Tobias Harris, Cade Cunningham, aren't going to have a big night tonight. And how about let's get a big game from Jalen Duren tonight and go up 2-0 on the Cavs.
That's I can make no comment working for Dan Gilbert. great to have you with us, but I love my Pistons too. Johnny Kane, you're the best. Detroit's blessed to have you, and we'll be back after the top of the hour here on JR Morning. And welcome back to the second hour of JR Morning. I'm getting that right. I'm not saying JR Sunday.
I'm telling you, I'm impressed.
Yeah, we're
I know how difficult that could be, though.
It's a blast being in studio with you. As you guys know, I text in here every morning with little comments.
Yes. As
Jamie and Chris and you are making comments, and I'll give mine. But it's such a delight to be in studio with you, Lloyd.
Well, it's great to have you here as well as Chris is off. And as you know, Jamie is handling her health issue. She's going, I think today she drops another episode of her podcast.
Right.
Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way. So make sure you take a listen to that wherever you get your podcast from. And, it's a great podcast, and I'm glad she's doing it because she's helping a lot of people. Well, we got Pistons tonight.
Got Pistons tonight. Big game.
Downtown.
Yeah. It's. Did you get your tickets?
I did not get my tickets.
You like watching sports live in the crowd with the parking and all that, or do you like watching it on TV?
Well, no, I like being downtown in the midst of it and stuff, you know. But, you know, on TV nowadays, you know, it depends on, you know, you got several places to watch. You can't maybe, you might not be able to watch it.
And now you have to call bars and go, do you have Peacock? Do you have this?
Yes,
right?
That's right. Well, you know, game two set for tonight. The Pistons now lead that series 1-0. Cavaliers still winless on the road this postseason. They're going to try to even things up before the series shifts to Cleveland on Saturday. Donovan Mitchell paced the Cavs with 23 points in that last game. James Harden had 22, but he couldn't hold on to the ball. James Harden, it's like he had oil on his hands or something. He had several.
Maybe a little tonic in his beard.
I think so. And so Cleveland will also monitor some injuries to some key rotation players ahead of this must-win game for them. I'm hoping we can get this game tonight and head over to Cleveland with a 2-0 lead. Yeah, I think
we're going
to
have Arne Tellem and Nick Barlage, both leaders of the two organizations. It's going to be fun to get their perspectives coming up in the show.
Yes.
About the business side of these playoffs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our starting pitcher, one of our starting pitchers, Framber Valdez, he's been suspended 6 games following a heated incident in a game against the Boston Red Sox, while Detroit Tigers manager A.J. Hinch was also suspended for a game. And Valdez was disciplined after hitting Red Sox shortstop Trevor Story with a pitch immediately after surrendering back-to-back home runs. And he was ejected after allowing 10 runs in the outing, 7 earned. The suspension, major setback for the Tigers' rotation, which is already, as you know, dealing with multiple injuries and key pitches. Hinch served his suspension last night as Detroit looks to rebound after dropping 2 straight games in the series. And the now they lost yesterday as well, so they're off today. And hopefully they can get it. But listen, they're still around 500, a little above 500 right now. So, you know, we have time, but it's going to be quite a stretch with our pitching situation.
Yeah, I know the pros are different than college, but this is the right time to get on the road and
it
kind of be together and do what they do in Kansas City and get things sorted out and regrouped and moving on.
The Attorney General, Dana Nesso, is joining attorneys general from 22 other states in opposing a new United States Postal Service proposal that would allow certain firearms to be shipped across state lines through the mail. The opposition comes after the United States Department of Justice determined a nearly century-old federal ban on mailing concealable firearms is unconstitutional and said it would no longer enforce the law. USPS later proposed regulations aligning with that opinion. In a multi-state letter, the attorneys general argued the executive branch cannot override a law passed by Congress. They also warned the change could make it easier for felons and domestic abusers and people under restraining orders to obtain untraceable weapons while increasing costs for law enforcement agencies investigating these gun crimes. Now, Nesso says the proposal would create what she called a dangerous loophole that threatens public safety in Michigan and across the country.
Yeah, what could go wrong putting guns in the mail? I mean, seriously.
I mean, right. Exactly. A major new study from researchers at Stanford University, Duke University, and the University of Michigan, and the University of Pennsylvania, finding mixed results when it comes to school cell phone bans. Researchers examined data from roughly 4,600 students nationwide and found student cell phone use during class dropped dramatically after bans were introduced, falling from 61% to just 13% in teacher surveys. GPS data also showed a sharp decline in phone activity during school hours. But the study found little evidence that bans quickly improved grades, attendance, bullying, or classroom attention. Suspension rates actually rose during the first year before leveling off later. Researchers say student well-being also dropped initially before improving over time. The report comes as at least 37 states and Washington, D.C. now require schools to restrict or ban cell phones during the school day.
And now you're starting to see it not only in the classroom but in the boardroom. Cell phones are disrupting meetings that are going on, and you're seeing CEOs go, there's no phones being brought out in this meeting. You're focusing on what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, even in church service.
Right.
In church service, and phones are going off, all kind of little songs and things are happening in church. So, yeah.
Disruption.
It is. Coming up, Dr. Steve Craig, he's going to come in. We're going to get on the couch with Dr. Craig and go over an issue that he has brought to us and see if we can solve it.
I'm looking forward to this. I got a few issues.
You want to work out?
Get them worked out in 10 minutes.
All right, but first it's time for WJR's Business Beat. It's brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here is Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. Trying to find an angle in your marketing strategy, one that reaches your audience at an attractive cost per acquisition, one that will help you break out from the noise and get noticed, one that will stand out from the same old approach to creating awareness and driving sales? Well, a creator marketing campaign is designed to do just that. eMarketer newsletter just featured a great story on how creator marketing is helping a brand break into public awareness by using creators to make it happen. Last month, Formula E, the motorsports championship for electric vehicles, invited creators to test its cars and compete in a live knockout style race streamed on its YouTube channel. And the event drew 5.8 million viewers, the league reports. Now, eMarketer goes on to report, as a challenger sport, Formula E has recognized the power of creators in building brand awareness and connecting with new consumers. Instead of strictly promoting clips from the actual races on social and hoping viewers tune in, the brand is leaning into original digital content that drives broader interest. Ellie Norman, Chief Marketing Officer of Formula E, had this to say: "It's our job to take the sport to where the target audience is. And often the best way to do that is not to think about ourselves as broadcasting to an audience, but really identify and work with those trusted voices and really establish communities. By doing it this way, we don't have the constraint of legacy that many other sports do," said Norman. "What's always key is maintaining that sporting integrity, but there's so much flexibility and agility to move quickly and test things with creator marketing. If race scheduling acts as the TV advertising and brings the reach, creator content provides those moments of excitement and momentum," she said, "and that gets audience attention and ultimately drives business." Now, in this particular program, Formula E trained 10 creators and put them in championship cars. Their experiences made the professional drivers more relatable while building respect for the sport, said Norman. "The reactions getting out of the car kind of went like this: that was the best 10 seconds of my life," quickly followed by, "How do you do this?" she said. And that raw, authentic reaction, not scripted, not prepackaged, but rather a from-the-heart, tell-it-like-it-is reaction, is what gets people's attention these days and ultimately makes the sale. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, and that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Thursday, May 7th. I'm trying to get all the days down right here.
Yeah.
JR Sunday has not come out. I got to say it a couple times. We got to promote JR Sunday.
Absolutely.
But I'm looking forward to this segment. Great guest right here in the studio.
Listen, we always look forward to Dr. Steve Craig from Craig Counseling Services and Consulting Group here, who we get on the couch with. He gives us a scenario, and usually, you know, Chris and Jamie do pretty good on, you know, giving a good answer.
I may have to phone a friend here.
I think
we are going to put your feet to the fire right now. Now we'll see what he's got. Right.
Doc, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
All right, here we go. Get ready, Mark. Dr. Steve, my brother lives in Texas and has a 15-year-old daughter. 10 months ago, a boy from school copied a picture from her Facebook account and went on a website that removed her clothes and created a fake nude image of her, which he then put up on Instagram for everyone to see. She was devastated and humiliated and is still recovering. My wife and I have a 15 and 17-year-old daughters, and we know they would be destroyed if that happened to them. So we blocked them from any social media accounts. But last week, we found out they both have secretly kept their accounts active and just used their friends' phones to access them. We grounded them and demanded they take the accounts down, but we also know they could just start them up again and even use different aliases to do it. And not only do we not trust them, but we know they are exposing themselves to this sort of abuse. How do we handle this with them when we can't realistically track their compliance? And if they get burned like their cousin, how are we supposed to handle that when they bring it on themselves?
Oh,
just give it to Mark.
No. Well, first of all, I don't think you bring it on yourself. If somebody chooses to do that to you, I think that's that person who has the issue and not you. But I think a lot of times when you punish a kid like that, when you punish them, a lot of times it doesn't stop it. It just kind of drives it underground, and they start doing what they've been doing, going to their friend's house and all that. I think what you do is you try to educate them, and you try to teach them how to spot manipulation and how to spot these kind of things, and let them know that, you know, when you see something like that, come to us. We have your back. And, you know, how to spot these kind of things. I think the education part is better than the punishment part, because they're gonna do what they've been doing, go over to their friend's house. Or
we did it.
You know, say, of course
right.
We did.
Well, you did. I'm not speaking to you.
I mean, come on. That's just my thought. I think the education part more than the punishment.
Oh, that's a great answer. The only thing I would follow up with that, I agree with you on where you're at, is communication with your child and somehow meeting them in the middle. Mm-hmm. It might even be more than education. It might be, let's jump into the forums. Let's go look at some things together.
Yeah.
So rather than teaching or preaching to the child, mm-hmm. you're trying to understand and kind of see some things and find examples of, look what's happening here. That gives some understanding to the child of what my parents are saying is really laying out in front of us together as parents and child. So I agree, education, communication, and by way of example, that's the way you educate.
Because you listen, you know, as a parent, I'm sure they're trying to raise their daughters, you know, as daughters who don't have to take risk, but you're going to have to take risk. It's how you deal with it, though, is mm-hmm. how you prepare them for it. That's my
thing. Neither of you are supporting the just banning them from social media altogether.
No.
Because that's kind of what they're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, and why not?
Because they're going to find a way to get on it anyway.
All right.
I also think the defense mechanisms come up, depending on what the punishment is, there's defense mechanisms that come up in the kids and they'll shun and go the other way.
Right. So the way I look at this is, you know, this is a mental health issue for both our kids and us as parents.
Okay.
Because we're worried about them out in the world.
Right.
Just like you are with them driving cars and alcohol and mm-hmm. sex. I mean, we're traumatized as well, too. We're sending them off in the world and they're vulnerable to these things. But I use those things to remind us that there's all kinds of dangers out there. It's not just social media. And our job as parents is not to teach the kids how to live in the world that we came from, but how to live in the world they're going to. And that's one of the mistakes we always make is that we keep thinking, well, here's how you do it and here's what you do. But that's what we did growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And the world's a different place.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not really equipped for the future. We don't know what's coming. We couldn't predict all this stuff was going to happen, which is why it really gets down to, and you guys both said this, it's education. It's coping skills. How we got through wasn't banning from all the stuff that we did in life, is that we learned how to insulate ourselves the best we could from the problems out there, how to make good decisions, how to, you know, everything that shows up in life has a potential danger. We have to teach, instead of hiding them from all of that, we have to teach them how to anticipate what's going to come,
mm-hmm.
how to deal with it when it's coming. And we already do this, like I said, with alcohol. So you're going to be in situations where kids are drinking. What are you going to do? And then what are you going to do when it goes wrong? And then what do you need me to do to support you? Will you text me? I'll come get you.
Mm-hmm.
Going through all of those potential scenarios teaches them the coping skills for what's coming rather than banning them. Because we also know the people who go to college, the people whose families ban them from any alcohol and any odd behaviors, they're often the ones who are the most irresponsible.
Yes.
Because they don't know how to handle any of it.
That's right.
So it's about teaching people to survive the tough things, and that requires conversations, and that requires us to teach them the coping skills to deal with the world. And then we cross our fingers. But I did check when I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I saw in an article that like 600 kids in the past few years have been subjected to this sort of thing.
Oh, right? No, it happened. Yes.
But that's both a good number and bad number, because you think 600, that leaps out like there's 600 times this has happened. But there's millions of teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So the percentages are still very small.
Yeah.
But it's a good opportunity, like Mark said, to go start educating them early. If you're going to get on social media, let's talk about all the scenarios and work through, and then keep talking with them about it. Talk, 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 talk. Cope, mm-hmm. cope, cope.
Because
that's how you handle it.
Because when you look at it, I mean, if you follow this type of scenario and you want to just ban them from it, I mean, it's just like your parents banning you from driving because they don't want you to get stopped by the police, and so we're just going to stop you from driving.
It's a great example. When, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, when cars were invented and people were out getting in car accidents and dying. So if we just said, well, you're not going to drive,
right,
then they would have grown up idiots. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Like,
exactly.
Don't use the internet. That was a thing, you know, 30 years ago. Oh, the internet's bad. Can you imagine if our kids didn't know how to use the internet? Right.
Oh,
they'd be terrible.
Yeah.
You cannot ban people from the world they're going to live in. You have to throw them in the world and give them the coping skills to handle it. Those kids survive better than the ones who got things banned.
Coping skills, that's a big deal, right?
Right.
And a lot of scenarios that we talk about.
It's always the same. Yeah. If you don't know the answer, you could just default to coping skills. Right.
Dr. Steve, always great to see you, man. Thanks a lot.
See you guys.
All right. Coming up, Arn Tellem, the vice chairman of the Detroit Pistons, talking Pistons basketball tonight down at LCA. That's next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. Quite an honor to be in studio today with Lloyd Jackson and also with our next guest. The Pistons take a 1-0 lead in the series with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Arne Tellem, vice chairman, has his hand on the rudder as the Pistons navigate their way through the playoff waters. And Arne, first of all, a dear friend, do so much good for the city of Detroit, you do. And it's an honor to have you here in the midst of the NBA playoffs.
It's great to be with you, Mark, and it's great to be up winning the first game 1-0. We have a big game tonight, so the place should be rocking.
I'm wondering, Arne, you know, the Pistons in the last series, and they played Orlando, and they were down 3-1, and they came back, won those three games. I mean, it was drama. It was tough. It gave my anxiety a little shake here. But, you know, from your vantage point, what does that kind of experience, that postseason experience, do for a young team's growth and identity? I mean, is that something that we kind of needed to get to where we are today?
I don't know if we needed it, but it made us stretch. I don't think I needed it personally.
Right.
But for the team, they say that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I think it's the learning process. And it definitely, I think, prepared us for those tough moments. Even like in game one, when it was 93-93, when Cleveland came back, you know, to have the ability to suck it up and you know, play great defense with great intensity and not let those and be able to seize those moments to your advantage. And I think the more you play those kinds of games, playoff basketball is a lot different than the regular season. We have a very young team. And it is part of the growth process. And I think our players now draw on those moments to know that they can handle those moments of adversity and overcome them. And I think that is really a good thing for them to feel and know that when they have those challenges, they can meet them, not be afraid of them, that they've been there before, and that they can handle it. And so it definitely is part of the learning process that I think every great team goes through.
Arne, the impact that you and your lovely wife Nancy have had on the city of Detroit has been incredible since your arrival here. You navigated the Pistons coming downtown, that move. You've navigated this growth, and you've done it with a very a patient and methodical approach as you're starting to see the fruits of all of this work, because you can't change a program around quickly. You've done this the right way. You're building a franchise that has the respect of so many. How has that process and how have you kept that steady hand throughout the time since your arrival here in Detroit?
Well, we couldn't have done it without the support and really the vision of the owner, Tom Gores, who, when we talked about that we had to go through the rebuild, it's not something you really want to do. It's not fun. It's really hard. But he stuck with it and supported it, and it showed incredible patience. And we couldn't have done it without him. And we went through, you know, some painful moments. I think for all and mid-market, small market teams, there's really only one way to do it. It's building a foundation of a team through the draft. And we did that over a 4 or 5 year period, starting with Isaiah Stewart, and then next year, obviously getting Cade, which was a huge, you know, foundational piece. And then the next draft, we got Jalen Duren, then Asar Thompson, adding Ron Holland. And then while you do that, then when we went through the painful decision of making a change and bringing in Trajan Langdon and ultimately J.B. Bickerstaff, I think he gave us the leadership on the basketball side that we really needed. And both have contributed significantly. Trajan then added some veteran pieces to that group and helped bring, you know, recruit J.B. to come here. From the minute that Trajan came in, J.B. was, when we made the decision to change coaches, Trajan really focused was on J.B. Bickerstaff as the right guy, and that was a brilliant choice. And J.B. has brought something here to the players. I think that's is so hard. He fights for them. He cares about them. The players know he has their back every day, every moment. And when you have a coach like that, it allows you to play with total freedom. And that's what he's given them. He's been an incredible leader for that, for a young basketball team. And you see him on the sidelines, how he fights for them every game. And he wears the referees out fighting for them. And that's what they needed. And he's really brought this group together. And for me, just seeing this group of players, I've been in professional sports, Mark. You know how hard this is to find, and in a team, this is probably the most connected group of players I've ever been around, or seen. You know, when I was an agent for many years, they really care for one another. It's a selfless group. It's all about the team. It's all about winning, and it's an incredible culture. And just seeing them in the locker room or traveling with them, I've never been around a group that is that close and connected. And you feel that on the court, and you feel that every minute of the time that you spend with them, you see it. And I think that feeling also helps us. And in those moments of adversity, going back to what you asked originally,
Arn. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. We got about a minute left, but I can't leave without asking you about the excitement that's going on about the WNBA team coming to Detroit, and how I hear so much excitement about having a WNBA team back here in the city of Detroit, and then also what it does having that facility that's playing right down there by off of Jefferson by Belle Isle, right there at the old Uniroyal site. That's going to be great.
No, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic win for the city. We talk about Michigan being a great football state, but it's an incredible basketball state. We have the national champion, University of Michigan. Michigan State has had an amazing program, and now the Pistons are back, and with the WNBA coming, I think it really is a great win for our fans, our incredible sports fans here. And I think the WNBA will serve not only to inspire young girls to play, it'll inspire all people. And they're incredible players. And I think the best thing about them is that they'll be really great ambassadors into this community. And what we're planning to building on the Uniroyal site is that, you know, obviously a new headquarters for the WNBA team, which will be a great building and mean a lot for this community, and we're hoping to, you know, and planning on developing a youth academy, a center for youth sports on that site, which will be great for the youth of Detroit, and it's much needed to bring, you know, great athletic facilities into the city for the kids of Detroit, and to give them a chance to maximize their potential and be able to participate and have great facilities to play in that are cutting edge and safe, and I think it'll be a great, beautiful site for this city, and I think it'll be one of the great, really one of the great and most important sites for all young people in the city.
Yeah, 100%.
Going forward.
100%.
Yeah, Arn, thank you so much for all you do for the city, and welcome back to JR Monday on this Thursday morning.
JR Thursday.
JR Thursday.
You said JR Monday.
JR Monday. JR morning.
We don't want to give people, think it's Monday.
Welcome back to JR morning on this Thursday. It's the Cavs and the Pistons. Everything's exciting right
Everything
now.
Everything is. Yes.
Great conversation with Arn Tellem, and we now switch to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Nick Barlage is the outstanding CEO of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Rock Entertainment Group that Rock Entertainment Group actually does a lot of positive things right here in the city of Detroit.
Yes.
And let's start with the game. Nick Barlage joins us. Nick, the Cavs are down 1. We're going into game 2, and these playoffs have been absolutely crazy how the games have gone, how the series have gone.
Yeah, gentlemen, first, good morning. Thanks for having me on. It's exciting to be on this side of Lake Erie for a few days this week. And you know, continue to see all the work that we're doing on both sides of the lake extend and really, you know, create a meaningful impact. But, yeah, look, we're down 1-0, and looking to try to even it up tonight at Little Caesars Arena. So it should be a remarkable series. Obviously, highly competitive, a myriad of different storylines, and we feel very fortunate to be able to be a part of it.
You know, Nick, Detroit and Cleveland have a long sports history of intensity. Does that rivalry energy factor into how this series kind of feels internally for your group?
Oh yeah, look, I think Dan said it well in his tweet the other day. You know, it's the Lake Erie series. I think the proximity of the fan bases, I think the similarities of the fabric of the people, or the DNA of the people that make up these great cities. You know, the fact that we're both kind of cities that are on the rise again. There's a myriad of storylines, but the similarities are so profound. I even look at it when the Guardians and the Tigers played in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think last year, you can see fans make the trip both ways. There's no doubt there's great atmospheres at both games, but you've got fans from both teams representing their cities. And I think it's a great point of pride. You know, we were talking about it with our president of basketball operations, Kobe Altman, last night. You know, we're two of the eight teams that are left in the NBA. 22 teams are home right now.
That's right.
And so when you start thinking about it from that perspective, you know, it's wonderful to have the two of those eight teams be right here in the Midwest and right here in Detroit and Cleveland.
There's nothing like NBA playoff. And as you look at these two leaders, both with Arn and Nick, preparing the games for the playoffs is a little bit different than preparing for the regular season. Once tonight is over, the Cavs are either going to be 1-1 or down 2. You're going to go home. And now it's the chance. What do you go, how do you press your team, your staff, to now prepare Rocket Arena to have the energy, to have the oomph to make certain that home court advantage is ready for the Cavs like the Pistons did here in game one?
Yeah, look, I think for us, first it starts with our chairman, Dan Gilbert. He is obsessed as we are with the fan experience. I was actually really proud of our group. We had 39 hours between tip-off to when we had closed out the Raptors in Series 1. We brought 450 Cavs United members up here to Detroit and team members. We loaded them on some buses. We did a little fan rally here at the department before the game, and we're going to do it. We're going to run it back again tonight. And then as we look to our home games transitioning, we have teams, we call it Take It to the Streets. We have people painting Cleveland in wine and gold every single day this week. Doing a ton of media hits just like this, and we'll be sold out. We'll be rocking at Rocket Arena. It's one of the best home court. We think it's the best home court advantage in all professional sports. And our fans show up early. They'll have their T-shirts on. They'll have the rally towels rolling. And we look forward to evening the series from every aspect we possibly can when it comes to the environment we curate at Rocket Arena. And so we've been building for this moment all year, and the moment we get into the playoffs, we really map out round by round what it should look like if we're able to continue to advance. And we've got some great things up our sleeves for when the series shifts to the other side of Lake Erie.
Well, Nick, speaking about building, COSM building a major new immersive venue here in downtown Detroit, and I can't wait till it's all done and open. What made Detroit the right choice for the next location?
Well, first, we can't wait to host you. It's going to be, the shared reality experience of COSM is just something you have to see to actually believe. We have a board meeting today about, just where we're at and checking in on where things are. For Detroit, look, it was easy. When we brought the team from COSM in, as we were making our investment in the business, and we were able to walk them through all that Dan and Bedrock has done here in downtown Detroit, and we showed them the site right there right off of Cadillac Square. Mm-hmm. They couldn't be more excited. And I think the thing that people, we need to really galvanize ourselves around this. Part of what made them so interested in coming to Detroit was when you study there's these fan indexes out there that study the passion of a fan base in certain markets. Markets like Detroit and Cleveland jump off the charts. And similar to Boston, similar to some other markets that are in that kind of top five, mm-hmm. top seven category. And so when you think about the passion that people have here for sports and entertainment, and I think too, the fact that, look, we have four seasons. And so, especially in the winter months, people are looking for more things to do. Mm-hmm. It really had Detroit has all the dimensions to be a great market for a Cosm. And I think the part that we just have to let sink in for a little bit is Detroit will be the fourth market that has a Cosm. Cleveland will be the fifth market in the world. We have demand from the Middle East, Asia, Europe. We have demand that is off the charts across the entire globe, and we're going to have it right here in our own backyard. And that's something we should all take a lot of pride in. And the people here in Detroit will love this venue. It will really change the way that people interact with sports and entertainment.
Nick, Dan has a vision for both cities. You have the responsibility as the CEO of both the Cavs and Rock Entertainment Group to execute a lot of those. The work you're doing with Cosm, Rock Entertainment Group is heavily involved in the commercial side of the Final Four and making sure that this city elevates that event. The way you tie threads, not only in Cleveland, but here in Detroit in a big way, we just got about 30 seconds left, is remarkable.
No, look, I appreciate it. You, as you know, Mark, we have a great group of people, great group of team members that are working on it with us every single day. You know, we really believe in these experientially driven economies that can really breathe life and vibrancy into these urban cores, both here in Detroit, but also in Cleveland. And when you have a chairman like Dan that sets the vision, sets the pace, and really invests at the highest of levels, not just in resource, but in time and in energy as well. This is a wonderful thing to be able to do, and really a life's work.
Nick Barlage, CEO, Rock Entertainment Group. Always a delight to have you on WJR, and we appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Appreciate you guys.
Yep.
And top of the hour news and all the latest news stories coming up, as well as Bill Martin, the former director of athletics for the U of M, talking about the Pistons, of course, and the state of college athletics. Next. Just an all-around good guy.
All-around good guy. And it's Thursday.
It is Thursday.
May 7th.
Here. Or like what I like to call it, Friday Eve.
Friday Eve, we're ready to go.
Yes.
I'll be back with you tomorrow, too, if you can put up with me.
Oh, no, you know, it's so nice. Let's do it twice.
Yeah, let's do it twice.
Yeah. Pistons tonight, downtown, LCA, Cavs. We're up one game. Can't wait. I expect it to be a win.
There's nothing like the city downtown when these things are
going
on.
Oh, my goodness.
When you have, you've got the playoffs going on, you're going to have fans watching it.
Yes.
Even in Cleveland, they're going to be down here over the weekend with Bruno Mars. And
oh, yeah, definitely.
A lot of big events.
A lot of big events, and that's why you need to make sure you get on the People Mover, because it is back. It is back up, and so it'll be running. So,
and that beautiful toned voice that takes you around.
Who gets you to each stop. Yeah. That person, yeah. And we're going to be talking to the general manager of the People Mover coming up at 8:49. So we'll talk more about that. Also, when it comes to the Tigers, some issues with the Tigers as well. Framber Valdez suspended six games following an incident in the game against the Boston Red Sox, while Detroit Tigers manager A.J. Hinch was suspended for a game as well. His suspension was yesterday, last night. Valdez disciplined after hitting Red Sox shortstop Trevor Story with the pitch immediately after surrendering back-to-back home runs, and he was ejected after allowing 10 runs in the outing, seven earned. The suspension, a major setback for the Tigers' rotation, Mark, which is, you know, dealing with some injuries to some key pitchers.
It really is, and these are the times you've got to step up and do things. We were talking about it earlier. This is a moment when you have players down, players injured, especially your ace in Skubal, that other guys need to step up, and that's what we're expecting to see, is guys starting to understand that they got to come forward, they got to be part of the answer, and at the same time, we're only a game back, so...
Yeah,
I feel good about where we are with the Tigers, and we'll be out there cheering them on every game.
Attorney General Dana Nessel has announced felony charges against Faye Baydoun, accusing the Farmington Hills businesswoman of misusing millions tied to a state-funded business development program. Now, prosecutors say Baydoun fraudulently administered a $20 million grant awarded to Global Link International, that's a nonprofit she founded, to attract international entrepreneurs to Michigan. Investigators say no businesses were relocated through the program, and instead they claim Baydoun used grant money for personal expenses while collecting a salary of more than $550,000 a year. The Attorney General's office says Baydoun submitted false invoices and reports to the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, including expenses tied to home furnishings, patio supplies, luxury rugs, and private dinners connected to then-Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan. Baydoun now faces 16 felony counts, including conducting a criminal enterprise, forgery, and larceny by conversion. The investigation is ongoing.
Yeah, and I can only speak generally. When you when you hear stories like this or allegations and charges, doing the right thing is so important. Transparency is so important. And these type of stories just make me cringe because there's so much good that happens right here in the city of Detroit.
Absolutely.
That happens in Michigan, that these stories don't let them detract from all the good that's being done.
High stakes face-to-face at the Vatican today. Secretary of State Marco Rubio met with Pope Leo for a closed-door audience. The meeting, the first between the Trump cabinet official and the pontiff in nearly a year, comes amid that bitter public feud. President Trump has recently disparaged the Chicago-born Pope as weak on crime and terrible for foreign policy following Leo's outspoken criticism of the U.S.-led war in Iran. And while Rubio, a practicing Catholic, says the trip was pre-planned, he acknowledges there was a lot to talk about, including religious freedom and humanitarian aid. The Pope, who marks 1 year in office tomorrow, has rejected Trump's claims that he supports Iranian nuclear ambition, stating his appeals for peace are rooted in the gospel. Rubio moves to meet with Italian Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni tomorrow.
I can't wait for the Netflix miniseries on all this exchange between the White House and the Vatican. Through this term, because you know it's coming.
Oh, come on. Absolutely.
Coming to Netflix soon.
a note believes to have been written by convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein has been unsealed by a federal judge. And after remaining hidden for years in a criminal case involving Epstein's former cellmate, U.S. District Judge Kenneth Karas ruled that it was no longer a valid reason to keep the document sealed. The handwritten note appears to reference investigations into Epstein and includes statements about choosing one's time to say goodbye. Epstein was found dead in his jail cell at Manhattan's Metro Correctional Center back in August of 2019. He was awaiting trial at the time on federal sex trafficking charges. Authorities ruled the death a suicide, citing major failures by jail staff, including missed security checks.
Yeah, when you hear when we hear these stories, it's horrible, right? The whole thing is horrible. And again, transparency, accountability is so critically important in our world today. It just makes it a better place. And I when you talk about transparency,
yeah,
all for it.
The Professional Women's Hockey League officially expanding to Detroit.
That's exciting.
Announcing yesterday that the city will become home to the league's ninth franchise. All home games will be played at Little Caesars, while the PWHL entry draft will take place at the Fox Theater on June 17th. Season ticket deposits open immediately. League officials say Detroit earned the team after years of strong fan support during the PWHL's takeover tour games, which consistently drew these large crowds and even set attendance records at LCA. PWHL Senior Vice President Business Operations Amy Shear says the city's passion for hockey made the expansion really inevitable, noting Detroit fans live and breathe the sport, which they do. The league is expected to continue expanding with up to three more franchise announcements possible in the coming weeks.
So we talked about WNBA coming.
Mm-hmm.
You now got professional women's hockey coming. You've got a new soccer stadium. The Hamps have added another professional team in TGL and golf with the Motor City Golf.
Yes.
It's growing. Detroit's growing. We're getting more and more.
And Detroit is just, it's attractive, and it's an attractive sports town. I mean, aren't we the only city that has
all four, right
here downtown?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because most...
We're doing it right.
We are doing it right because, you know, of course, we remember the times when they played, you know, out in Silver Dome and the Palace and stuff, and you go to other markets, L.A., where they played at the Forum and Inglewood, and to have all our teams downtown.
And Tom Izzo was a guy at the Final Four. Teams would stay out in the suburbs and come into the city to play the games. He's the one who said the players need to be where the games are played, and he pushed the NCAA move the team. So when the Final Four rolls in here in April,
yes,
all four teams will be downtown, walking the streets, feeling the energy of the city versus
That's
out
wonderful.
In some suburban hotel. Yeah, it's
That's
great.
This too, television pioneer Ted Turner has died at the age of 87. Turner reshaped modern media by founding CNN in 1980, launched the world's first 24-hour all-news channel, and helped define the modern cable news era. His influence expanded into sports ownership, vast Western ranch lands, major philanthropic efforts. He was nicknamed Captain Outrageous. Turner built a media empire that included TBS, TNT, the Atlanta Braves, before selling his company to Time Warner. In his later years, he focused on charity, including a historic $1 billion pledge to United Nations causes while battling Lewy body dementia. Tributes pouring in from the business world, once called the Mouth of the South, he's remembered as a bold, unpredictable force who permanently changed television and news.
Ted Turner was a big sailor. He loved to sail, right? World, America's Cup, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Our next guest, Bill Martin, former athletic director at the University of Michigan. He's a big sailor, too. Stripes goes all over the Great Lakes.
Really?
Doing the port here to Mackinac, the Chicago to Mackinac. We're going sailor story to sailor story. Ted Turner set the pathway for how news is disseminated in our country.
Absolutely, yep. He did. Coming up on JR Morning, as Mark says, Bill Martin, former director of athletics from the University of Michigan, joins us here on 760 WJR.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Thursday. It's great to have you with us. Bill Martin is a highly respected leader in amateur sports. Of course, 10 years serving as a director of athletics at the University of Michigan. He was a president of the United States Sailing Association, as well as serving as president of the board of the United States Olympic Committee. He does incredible things across the nation, across the globe when it comes to sports. He's also a very respected businessman right there in Ann Arbor, a city that I love, mm-hmm. believe it or not, Lloyd.
Oh,
I enjoy Ann Arbor. And I also enjoy Bill Martin.
Place.
He's a dear friend, and he joins us now here on JR Morning. Good morning to you, my friend.
Hey, you make me laugh when you say you love Ann Arbor.
At least in spurts.
I get it. And I love East Lansing in spurts also.
We've had a lot of fun over the years, both while we were serving as athletic directors and since kind of watching the landscape. You still are in touch, like I, with many of the Big Ten counterparts that are sitting in the chairs today. They have a much different job than you and I did. It was, I would say, in a way, more holistic. Today's landscape is ever-changing. You have the financial model that's come into play with name, image, and likeness. You have the transfer portal. We're talking about, not you personally, Bill, but the industry. We've also seen expansion in some of the championships. The NCAA Basketball Committee is looking at expanding the field. We've seen the college football playoff expand. A lot has changed since we've departed our campuses.
Absolutely has. And the skill set that the athletic leadership needs has changed dramatically because of the impact of particularly NIL. And it's a challenge today. And the house settlement, which happened last year, which means that each school can spend a minimum of $20.5 million on compensation to athletes. Most schools are saying, well, where are we going to get that money from? We're already working at a zero margin, particularly in the world of athletics. I saw some recent statistics from the Big Ten that it's losing on an operating basis $500 million a year. That's across all 18 schools, and with an expense increase rate of roughly 10% per year, it's unsustainable. So something has to give, and we're all looking at Washington to kind of come across with legislation that would give the NCAA or any other institution some antitrust protection to bring some continuity and semblance to the whole spectrum of challenges that athletics in higher education faces. And, right now I was looking at the mission statement of the University of Michigan and Michigan State yesterday. And nowhere does it include, let's go win a lot of sporting events. It's just not in there. But unfortunately, these universities are faced with spending so much of their capital and human resources on this issue of collegiate athletics. I mean, it's clearly become a business, and the skill set to manage it has changed dramatically. There's just too many complex intertwining challenges that face it today. And you said the two dirty words, NIL and transfer portal. those are the two things that need to be addressed. But, you know, put aside those issues because they only impact, you know, at Division I football and basketball, really. College sports is healthy, and people need to understand that across Division I, II, and III, and the Olympics. I mean, it's wonderful to see all the options that are there today. I had thought 20 years ago that what we need to do, as the media rights have increased for athletics, wouldn't it be wonderful if the universities could come together and simply say, well, whatever our budget is today for athletics, let's increase it by CPI each year. But if our media revenues increase more dramatically, which they have, let's take that money and put it in our endowment and let's use it for academic and research purposes. But that hasn't happened. So I guess I'm an idealist in that sense.
Bill, you know, how do you balance the idea of student athlete with the modern reality of revenue sharing and professional level expectations? I mean, are we getting closer to college sports functioning like a pro league, or will there always be a distinct separation?
You're absolutely right, Lloyd. There's no question about it. I don't think we have balanced it. We've tipped it all the way over at the elite level, which we're talking about now, to the athletic side. I was at a meeting at the Big Ten Conference recently in Chicago, and I asked the question of three or four athletic directors, have any of you had any student athletes held out of competition for academic reasons? And you know what the answer was? Zero. Mm-hmm. So I can recall when Mark and I were sitting in the chair, we were always scrambling to make certain that our athletes were academically eligible. That doesn't happen anymore. The focus is now all on winning.
When you look at private business, Bill, competition and that competitive nature is there. You're starting to see separation in college sports at a lot of levels. You're seeing it on a bench where some players are getting paid, some aren't. You're seeing it within athletic departments where certain schools are getting funding to attract athletes and certain ones aren't. And you're seeing it in leagues where certain leagues are elevating. Is that separation something that has any healthy nature to it, or do we need to find a way to bridge maybe some of these separation gaps that are starting to build more and more?
Good question, and I'm not certain we can do it. The SEC doesn't have as many sports on average per school as our Big Ten schools. Truly, you know, the Big Ten produces more Olympic medals, et cetera. But what the SEC does is, on an individual school basis, it spends more on its football and basketball programs than the average Big Ten school does. So there is disparity from school to school. And I don't think there's any way in the world we have today without the help of Washington that's going to change.
Bill, 30 seconds. Pistons played tonight downtown, LCA, up one game to nothing against the Cavs. How do you see it playing out tonight?
Well, number one, let's have a shout out for J.D. Bickerstaff. He's done a tremendous job. I couldn't be more happy. I watch every minute of every game, and they play defense. He shares the minutes in the game, and they're playing as a team. I'm excited, and I see another win tonight for sure, and I see the Pistons moving on. I recall going back to the Pistons games when George Yardley played at the University of Detroit field house. That's how far back I go with the Pistons. Just great, and, you know, let's go Pistons.
Bill Martin, I enjoyed our time together in the seat, and more importantly, I enjoy our friendship since we both had the opportunity to lead our institutions right here in this state of Michigan. Thank you so much for joining us on JR Morning.
Great to be with you guys.
Pistons.
Go Pistons.
Coming up, Johnny Kane, broadcaster, Detroit Sportsnet, talking about the Tigers and the playoffs. That's next. Welcome back to JR Morning on a Thursday, what I call Friday Eve. And Mark Hollis in for Chris Renwick with me. Been here all morning. Thank you, Mark, for being here. And the People Mover had been shut down for a couple of months. It reopened yesterday about 6:30, and it was shut down for some maintenance. We had a high wind event back in March, and that caused the shutdown. And on the line with us now is Malia Howard. She is Detroit Transportation Corporation Chief Executive Officer and General Manager of the Detroit People Mover to tell us what happened while it was down and why it went down. Malia, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. This is such an honor. I have to say this before we begin. Sure. I am so proud to be speaking to the voice of the People Mover.
Yeah.
Like, you literally are the voice. And so every day when I'm out in the system and I'm riding the train, I get to hear your voice. And it's just not me, obviously, but all of our passengers, all of the visitors to the city, all of the residents. So for me, this is an honor. So I'm excited this morning.
Well,
so thank you for having me.
Malia, yes. This is Mark Hollis. I was going to compliment you on that choice of having the sweet tones of Lloyd Jackson echoing throughout downtown, something I enjoy quite favorably as I work down there every day.
Isn't it? It's just very much it's melodic. It's calming. And you know, I appreciate it. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, and I love doing it. I mean, this is my city, and I just, you know, love what's been happening in downtown Detroit. The People Mover back up and running, several weeks of repairs.
Enjoy downtown, then exit at Grand Circus Park for a short walk to Little Caesars Arena.
Man, did the train come by the station?
I think
it just came past the window. Tell us what happened in March in this high wind event and what you guys had to do to get it back online again.
Yeah, so absolutely. So on March 13th, during the high wind event, there were winds as much as 75 miles an hour. And so some debris fell off of or floated off of the top of one of the buildings onto our guideway. And so subsequently, the train picked it up. And as it bent the corner to go around at the Millinder Center, so the debris floated down to the Financial District station. The train picked it up, and once it hit the curve around Millinder, that's when the issue started, right? Nobody, mm-hmm. You can't see the debris on the guideway necessarily, mm-hmm. And that particular debris was like aluminum, and it was a sheet. It looked like, you know, the fascia covering, though, for those of us who are invested in roofing. And so that's what it looked like. And so once it picked it up and got to that curve, it started to ball itself up underneath the wheel. So obviously it started to spark. Our teams were able to go out, assess the damage. And it took about 3 days because the train was actually inside the station.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't able to get a crane in, obviously, to pick up the front of the train, and we couldn't use our jacks to extricate the metal. And so our team literally spent days chiseling out that metal.
Wow.
And getting it from underneath the wheel. And so once that was done, they were able to get it back with the help of what we call a Wally. And so it's like a smaller train, and it was able to aid the train to get back around to the maintenance and control facility. And then that's when the work had to begin.
Gotcha.
And so repairs needed to be made onto that entire right side of the train. So the brakes, all of that. It's called a collector shoe.
Mm-hmm.
All of the electrical conduits. The damage was extensive. It took out the lighting system that goes down Larned. All of that had to be replaced. We had to replace just a lot. And so, but we're here. And our team did a phenomenal job. If it weren't for the highly experienced team that I have,
yeah,
I can't say that we still wouldn't be down. They've spent days making sure that the tracks, or weeks, if honestly, the tracks were secure. That the electrical system or our ATC, our brains, were secure and fixed, and that there were no issues there, and did a lot of preventive maintenance on other vehicles while we waited to get clearance to return to service.
Well, yeah, it's an unbelievable asset to have downtown. Bruno Mars is coming in this weekend. Great to have it up and running. It for the Final Four coming up in April, unbelievable. And it was one of the greatest tools for the NFL draft when we had it here back a few years ago. I was trying to get Jason the NFL draft jingle, but he missed that one.
I don't have that, but I do have this.
Game time in the 313. Use Grand Circus Park Station for the Pistons and other events at LCA.
There you go.
Let's go.
There you go.
Yeah, it is a big deal, and we're happy that it's back up. I'm happy that I can I plan on being down there this weekend, riding the people mover and mouthing the steps. Mouthing the
stops. Listening to yourself as you roll around the city.
And have people look at me like, what is wrong with this guy? But, Malia, Howard, we appreciate you, and we appreciate you being the chief executive officer and general manager down there. And we're glad the people mover is back because we're going to need it. Those Pistons are playing well and they're in the playoffs. And we're going to need it, especially for tonight as they get underway with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Malia Howard, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. And again, it's just been a pleasure to meet both of you. And again, if you get a chance, come ride the train with me. I'm out there every day.
Okay. Yeah. Meet you on the train.
Get on the train.
All right. All right. See you later. All right.
Now, if we can only get Kevin Deese's voice on the train at the Detroit Zoo or something like that, it would be wonderful.
The Detroit Zoo, that might be the spot. That'd be good. I like that. I love the People Mover. When I have out-of-town guests, I always take them down and ride the People Mover. I really enjoy it. It's just a great way to see the city from up above.
And I remember Mayor Duggan telling me that when it first opened back in the 80s, about 30 years ago, that the only people who rode the People Mover were the couriers from the different companies who take packages to different buildings. He says now it's, what, about 100,000 a month or something like that. People are riding it just profusely.
Oh, when I worked at Channel 4, we had a station right outside of Channel 4's door.
Yeah.
We took that to stories. We took that to our live shots and whatnot. We loved it, yeah.
I mean, and the Hudson Building went up right around it. So now when you're in the Hudson Building,
it's
flying right by and it's there are convenient stops. You can park. You can see the city. And the fact that it's free, that's one of the best parts.
Very cool.
Kev, what's coming up on the show?
I don't know. I'm going to the Pistons game tonight, so I didn't even prep. I'm just I'm excited. Charlie LaDuff's going to be on. He's talking about how the FBI is looking into this toxic dirt problem with the housing. It's getting bigger. And Claude Molinari is going to come in and talk about the women's hockey.
Nice.
That is going to be awesome. Claude is such a cheerleader for this city. He's absolutely
And we're now a Michigan
fabulous.
City.
I know.
Really, he's got it going.
It's so fun to pump up Detroit. There's just so much going on. The other day, the Tigers were playing, the Pistons were playing, and it was Cinco de Mayo all on the same day.
Best day ever.
We had a bar owner on. It was fun. So, we're gonna keep it positive today.
All right. Well, we had a great time with Mark Hollis. We're going to do it again. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks. I get another chance.
You get one more chance.
There we go.
All right. Kevin Dietz, All Talk, next here on 760 WJR.